This episode is sponsored by FX's Fleischman Is in Trouble, starring Jesse Eisenberg, Claire Danes, Lizzie Kaplan, and Adam Brody. The drama tells the story of recently divorced Toby Fleischman, who dives into the world of app-based dating with the kind of success he never had in his youth. Then, his ex-wife disappears, leaving him with their two children and no hint of her return. FX's Fleischman Is in Trouble, streaming November 17th, only on Hulu.
This episode brought to you by
Audible.com.
Oh man, Mikey.
Anticlimactic. We let him do one ad, and this is what happens.
Oh, wow. Stephen King, he writes all the books. Audible, just read them out loud.
All right, guys. So audibletrial.com/horrorvirgin will give you 30 days free and a book to get you started. And for your book recommendation, Stephen King.
Book recommendation is Misery, because it's in front of me.
Yeah, and it's really good. Misery, that's the movie we're doing. But this is one of my top five favorite books of all time. I've read it several times. The audio version of this is really good, too.
Who reads it?
Lindsay Krauss reads it. So, Todd, how do we access this fantastic code of wonders at Audible again?
Yeah, just go to audibletrial.com/horrorvirgin for 30 days free and a book to get you started and make that book Misery. Enjoy it, guys.
People like
this
readers.
Episode also brought to you by Nick Beam. Our $50 Burn It Down Patreon patron. Guys, wants you to check out Preacher6.com. Go check it out, guys. There are two trailers up. You can see this movie. They're trying to get funded. And if you like it and want to see the movie, help them get funded.
Mm-hmm. Nick B, thank you so much.
We appreciate you, Nick B.
I do, man.
So, guys, if you want to get your very own shout out at the beginning of every episode, check out our Patreon. That is one of the levels. Guys, love you, mean it. Enjoy the episode. We will see you guys at the end for some muggity mugs.
Muggity mugger.
Yeah, all of them.
All mugs.
I wonder if there's a theme song in the mug.
Ooh, we should bring in some theme music.
I don't know, but which theme music should it be?
We're not doing the mugs yet, Jen.
I know, but the mug can't wait. I can't wait.
Roll that theme music.
There we go. Yeah! Nailed it.
If only I knew how to do a helicopter sound, that would be the perfect
this
moment.
This all puts a whole new meaning on
the Was that a good helicopter?
That's a good Saturday.
Oh, crap. Welcome to the Horror Virgin, everybody.
Yeah, baby.
Mikey has corrupted this podcast for good. I'm Jennifer.
Oh, Mikey.
Oh, God.
And I'm the Horror Virgin, Todd. And we watched Misery.
That's right, everybody. It's a Stephen King episode. Woohoo!
So guess who's going to have some thoughts?
I do have a notebook full of thoughts.
And the book right here.
I do have the book right here. Yeah, I love this book. And the copy I have, I posted this on social media, but it's got this cover of Misery's Return, like a romance novel cover. But instead of Fabio, it's Stephen King's head on like Fabio's body.
Guys, let's just say that page is well used.
I'm a lady.
Let me touch this book here.
What is it with you and sound effects?
I know.
You are the Michael Winslow of his podcast.
The Mikey Winslow.
The Mike E. Winslow. I like it.
I'll take it.
I hadn't seen this movie in a long time, and I think I've only seen it once.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
I've heard many times that this is the best Stephen King adaptation, or one of them, but Stephen King adaptations are known for being very, very bad.
What's the best one? What do you guys think is the best one?
My favorite Stephen King adaptation is Gerald's Game.
I haven't
seen
it, but
where she gets tied to the bed?
Yeah.
Listen, Mikey, some people are into that. You shut your goddamn mouth.
It's like kind of like this movie.
Yeah, except it's the woman that's tied up. I made a joke about how the dialogue in this movie was stupid, and you were like, yeah, Stephen King's not good at writing dialogue.
He's not good at writing dialogue.
And then in my mind, I thought to myself, it's weird that one of the world's best writers is not a good writer.
Well, Stephen dialogue is not the only thing that writers write.
Yeah,
right?
Stephen King also writes terrible endings.
Okay, before you shit all over Stephen King, how many Stephen King books have you actually read?
Yeah, Mikey, how many Stephen King's books have you read?
Probably like 7 or 8.
Like 70?
Is that how many I have to read to have an opinion?
Yeah. In this pod loft.
Well, Jen, I'm gonna hate to break it to you. I've read 0 Stephen King books, and I'm about to have a lot of opinions all over this movie.
Well, okay, so what makes this book, I think, so much better than the movie is that all of the beats of the story are here, but there's so much more about what the characters are thinking, and that's what makes it a really good book, and that's what Stephen King is really good at.
All I know is he wrote this book about tying a chick to a bed, and I support that.
He wrote two books about tying people to beds.
Is it Stephen Kingism?
No, it's not.
What?
Kinky motherfuckers have been tying people to beds forever. Trust
me.
Book.
Fight me.
There is a spreader bar in this movie. We'll get to it. So guys, so this movie starts out with James Caan
smoking a cigarette,
getting drunk, and then driving in the snow like a goddamn idiot.
Yeah. This is a 2-hour long PSA.
Of drinking and driving in snow, yeah.
You don't need the snow, Jen. Don't even drink and drive.
No, it's totally safe as long as there's no snow.
Honestly, from what I understand...
I'm just kidding, kids. Don't drink and drive.
From what I understand, and guys, correct me on this if I'm wrong out there, but if you are drunk driving in snow, it's okay. Cancels each other out.
It does.
Yeah. So James Caan finishes his book. He gets drunk, smokes his cigarette, and drives his 60s Mustang down a snow hill.
Just listening to music and fishtailing around. Mm-hmm. He's got
it. Was the summer of 69.
Is that what it is?
I don't think that song was out then. Yeah. But yeah, so he's like driving down the hill. No,
he's
it's
got
some
his manuscript in his pocket.
In his fancy leather
in
carry
his
case.
Passenger seat. Yeah.
It's actually not that fancy. There's a sentimental story we find there out is. When he goes to his Mayan palace after the accident.
Wait, that scene didn't happen inside the car.
I was already making shitty jokes in this movie. So he eventually crashes. I mean, I don't think any...
It starts snowing,
and so he decides to go faster.
What do you mean it starts snowing, guys?
It wasn't snowing when he was...
Snow is pervasive. Like, it covers the ground.
But it's out in the air, which is technically snowing.
When he sets out, it's perfectly safe because there is no snow actually falling from the sky.
You can't see street.
That's true.
But there is no snow in the air, and he's only had like four drinks.
He's cool, officer. Don't even worry about it.
I'm worried that somebody is going to think that we are saying it's okay to drink drive.
Guys, it's okay to drink and drive.
Don't drink and drive.
Guys, you're young. Take chances.
Tom was telling me he watched all of Mrs. Maisel while he was driving to his mom's house.
I've been outed.
Like, how does that work?
So James Caan wrecks his car. He's dumb. You do not drive in the snow.
Yeah.
Or drive drunk. In case there was any indication right. Before we fell on that.
We've made a lot of jokes, but we are not saying it's okay to drink and drive.
So James Caan is driving on the street. And by street, I mean like he's really just driving down an ice skating rink.
Ice expressway.
And the ice expressway.
What are the things where the bobsleds go down?
Cool runnings.
Feel the rhythm. Feel the rhyme. Come on, boy. It's misery time.
So John Candy shows up and just shoes him off the
he's going down John the chute. Oh. He's James Caan down the chute.
And then he flips the Mustang and goes off the road and
because it starts snowing real heavy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then a female John Candy comes and saves him.
No, it cuts to the interior where he has like a drunk face.
Oh, that's right. Well, no. He goes to his what I call his mind palace.
Oh, yes.
He goes to his mind palace and that's when you see the meeting with his editor before he goes up there, I think.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure of the timeline.
She's talking about Misery's Return about to be published.
His book is about to come out.
Misery's Child.
Misery's Child's worried she dies.
Right.
And then Misery's Return is the one he writes when she's
trying.
Yes, Misery's Return is the one Annie makes him write.
We go to the Mind Palace or flashback, and they're talking to the book.
Lauren Bacall, editor.
That's his agent, I guess?
Yeah. Yeah, they're talking about this new book that's coming out. It's Misery's Child. And this is when they say that he killed Misery in this book, right?
Yeah, I think so.
She does say it.
Yeah, so he's been writing this Misery series of books, and it's made him a lot of money, but he doesn't really like it.
And they're very popular, but they're like cheesy romance novels.
Cheesy romance novels? Yeah, they are.
He wants to write like serious work. Yeah, so he's written this book, Fast Cars, that he's talking about, or he's working on a book, Fast Cars.
I think you mean Untitled.
It is. In the book, it's called Fast Cars, and the movie is Untitled.
Yeah, so Jen Untitled. Likes to just take the book and then pretend the movie is the book.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wait, can I ask though, in all fairness, do you not see them as two separate works of art based upon the same?
Yes, I do. Okay. And I like the book a lot better.
I think that's fair for pretty much every movie. I've never heard someone say, man, the movie was a lot better than the book.
Yeah.
Fight Club was close.
That's because it's word for word the book.
Exactly.
Like Chuck Palahniuk writes in screenplays.
I like
Chuck Palahniuk. I'll read his books because they're screenplays.
But then we come back to Inside the Car where James Caan's making silly faces at the camera and I started laughing.
You did.
He's not really making silly faces towards the camera so much as he is
almost dead. Definitely has
a concussion, is almost dead, and the female version of John Candy's there to save him. Now that we've said that, like, all I could see instead of Kathy Bates is John Candy in a wig, and this movie got a lot better for me in my mind. It's so good.
I love Kathy Bates.
I love John Candy.
And John Candy.
Yeah, they're
too.
Both, and don't get me wrong, Kathy Bates is amazing in this.
She rocked out that fireman's carry. So, yeah, she walks up to the car with a crowbar.
Through the snow. Fireman carried him out through the snow.
And saved the manuscript.
It's hard. Yeah.
Fast car / untitled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I guess we wake up with James Caan in her house.
I'm your number one fan. I'm your number one fan. Your legs are all fucked up. I'm your number one fan. Everything's going to be fine.
So now, so the next few scenes, literally like the next 15, 20 minutes are her just like nursing him back to health and then having like little fights.
Yeah.
Not really fights so much as just her like, you really see she's got like anger and control issues. Yeah.
We also need to go back to his injuries because they play an important part of our conversation.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
His legs are all fucked
up. His legs have compound fractures all throughout them.
Which
really
she said.
Well, his legs look real bad.
They do look real bad. But later, like before the scene that everyone talks about, his legs look better.
They are
getting
better.
I do think she set his legs.
She probably set them sufficiently.
Did she set it and forget it?
She did set it and forget it, yeah. But I mean, we don't see him get up to, like, we don't ever see him, like,
drumming thing.
Moving his legs. We don't see him, like, bending his knees. Like, I don't think he's going to be able to walk again on the way that she set his legs.
Well, do you mean, like, at the end of the movie when he's walking?
Absolutely.
No, I mean, after he goes to the doctor and gets all that fixed by a real person. Yes, that's when he walks again.
I'm with Todd. I think she really set the leg. And then his shoulder's dislocated. This plays a part in our conversations from now on. Dislocated.
She says,
put it back in the socket.
But I worked it back in. She doesn't say that.
I don't think she said it was a bitch.
She doesn't approve of Kurt.
She said it was a cock a doodle do, but I popped it back in the doodly dip.
Doodly dip.
So dumb.
You don't even get the Ned Flanders jokes, do you?
Reminds me of my weekend.
Because you don't watch.
I think I hated her more than you're supposed to. Like, she's an extreme version. But, like, she was super religious and, like, I just couldn't stand it.
Yeah. Yeah, and so the beginning is you don't know anything's wrong yet, but she's just kind of annoying, you know?
Yeah, I mean, so, like, no joke, if I had woken up in this situation, I would have been like, fucking jackpot. This chick is a nurse, there's a blizzard, so I can't go to the hospital, and she's nursing me back to health. This could not be better.
Because I would have just frozen to death in my car.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, so, like, she saved me. Yes, she's a little annoying, but I'll wait it out. It'll be fine.
And clearly we know it's not going to go that way because it's a movie, but, like, if I was in James Caan's situation, I'd be like, this is such a blessing. I'll be fine.
Yeah.
In a day or two, I'll be in the hospital. I'll have a man looking at me who can really fix me.
But I mean, she explains that the phones are out, the blizzards blocked the road.
And all of that is completely plausible.
It is. And I think,
because he ran off the road real good.
Yeah. And it was super snowy, and then it started snowing again. Like, there's just snow everywhere. It's someplace in Colorado. And why would you go there? Snowminton. That's what it is.
It's like his tradition. He goes to a lodge to finish his
I think he said he goes to the same lodge every time. So he has like this tradition, which we don't really know until later in the movie, but that's what we open up the movie on. It's him acting out that tradition. And when he finishes a book, he smokes a cigarette, drinks champagne, and then dangerously drives on a hill until he wrecks his car.
In the book, he immediately, on the first page, it says she's dangerously crazy. And he immediately is like, something is fucked up here.
Well, page of the movie.
Sorry. I thought you meant the book he writes in the movie.
No. So, in this book, we immediately know she's
I was about to say by that point he knows she's crazy too, so that makes sense, but
but I feel like the movie did an okay job saying she's kind
of
crazy.
You can definitely tell she's unbalanced because
you don't want to wake up and someone be like, I'm your number one fan.
I don't know, fans out there, if I ever pass out, feel free to take me and tie me to a bed. Actually, I'm not into that.
That was a very quick 180.
But when you wake up, just be like, I've got bacon. Don't be like, I'm your number one fan, Tom.
Honestly? Yeah, bacon?
Yeah.
That'd do it.
You're hurt. I've got bacon. That's what I want to wake up to.
Bacon and blowjobs.
Yeah.
It's the best way to wake up.
What is happening here?
That's what a B&B is.
Men are talking, Jen.
That's an adult B&B.
All right. I'm just going to read my book. You let me know when you're done.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so then what happens? But yeah, so in the movie, and I think it works better in the movie for us to not know that she's crazy right away, because then you start to see just the first hints of it. And it's almost like what you were saying, like, you know somebody kind of like that.
Everyone definitely does know someone like that. Mm-hmm. And it's not that she's super religious, because I know super religious people who are great people, but it's that she's super religious and crazy.
No, she seems like a work person that you don't like working shifts with. Or like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, who's working? Kathy Bates.
Oh, I'm out. I'm out.
Because she's like, you say shit. And she's like, I don't need you to say that word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then
yeah.
she gives you that look. And then she like slips some drugs into your.
Yeah. And then
later.
She like cuts a puppy up on your cubicle. We've all been there.
So we start to see that she's a little nuts.
I think the first time it's really clear is when she's feeding in the soup and, yes. and she starts spilling the soup, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that this scene?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's like a bunch of scenes that all take place in that one room, his room, yeah. we'll call it.
In between that, the cop, we meet Buster the cop and his lovely wife.
Oh, man. Are
favorite
they,
character.
Oh, honestly, I yeah. did like yeah. them.
I did
it's
too.
It's clear that they were very much in love.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Doing that, it all the time.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. They get down.
And they're like in their 70s.
Oh, yeah, but she's still definitely down to pound town.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. she was, like, trying to go up his leg. And
while they were on duty.
Yeah.
Yeah, they work together, they yeah. live together, they love together.
And they play together.
Yes, you know, yes. Man. And she tries to, like, rub up on his leg and stuff.
Why
like,
are you doing it to yourself, though? Every time you say rub up, you, like, caress your
and
own
And
you're
getting
leg.
A little bit closer, yeah. yeah.
Ugh. Well, I don't want to sit on that couch
I'm
again.
I'm very lonely.
Oh, my God.
Oh, you just
anyway,
need
back to the story. He's like,
not without the coconut butter.
Honey, we're on duty. Do you care? If you're in this car, you're a sheriff's deputy.
Yeah.
She's like, I'd rather be back in bed
with my husband or
under
whatever.
The covers yeah. with the sheriff.
It was very sweet.
Deputizing all over.
You know
place.
What?
yeah. And this one was not into it.
His Cialis hadn't kicked in yet.
I don't think he needed it because of love.
Because of love.
The power of love.
I have always misunderstood that Huey Lewis song.
Yeah, so the sheriff's looking for him.
Can we talk about when he first notices that she's crazy
yeah,
as fuck?
The
soup scene,
that
yeah.
That happens right after this.
Oh, okay.
That's why I was saying in okay. between that, we meet Buster.
We're going to have yeah. trouble in this episode because yeah. this whole movie is car crash, an
detailed
hour and a half
synopsis.
With him in bed, and
yeah.
then the end.
Yeah, no, I know you write down notes. I'm just
and
saying.
And I've read this book 20
There are a lot
times.
Of scenes.
Oh, yeah.
Like that are
I
the same
feel
scene.
Like not,
they're not
right.
the same scene.
It's like an escalation of the same type of situation, though, in the same room.
Yeah, so it does kind of muddled together. I don't mean that in a bad way, though.
No, yeah. Yeah, so the first actual tangible craziness we start to see from her is when he swears. No, he's
no,
talking
no,
about...
She's talking about the book.
She's been reading
she
his new
books.
Book, yeah. Yeah.
And she's like, the profanity. And she starts shaking the soup all
the Untitled mm-hmm. or Fast Cars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. I
Which
don't
is
go
not,
down...
It's not a misery
no,
book.
No, no, no.
So she spills the soup on the bed and then she gets really frustrated and mad at him and then she's like... She starts to go a little nuts.
Yeah, and you sort of see her cycle of get really mad,
yeah.
come down from that and apologize for being that mad.
In the book, she gets really mad at him for making her spill the soup and then goes and gets a bucket of dishwater and cleans it up and then makes him drink the dishwater. The book always takes it just a little bit further than what we see in the movie. That's part of why I like the book better. Oh, and so now Annie has gotten the new book, Misery's Child, and she's really excited to read it. She's like, oh, Misery's my best friend. She starts talking a little bit about how much she loves this book, how it got her through a hard time when her husband left her.
Quote unquote left her.
And then we hear a thunderclap alluding that.
Do we hear a thunderclap?
I do not
we
think
did.
We hear a thunderclap.
In my mind we do because that's when we know. I don't think he
in
really
the book
left
you hear
her.
A thunderclap.
Actually, I think in the book he does actually leave her because he realizes she's crazy and he bones out before
I don't
she
think they ever
him.
Address what happened
yeah,
to her husband in this, but yeah. I would have fucking left her.
The memory lane book is very extensive in the book. It's
oh,
really
I'm sure it is. I mean, it's pretty extensive in here. So
it is.
I'd imagine it gets into a lot more detail in the book.
It does. Annie's really excited to read the new book, and we know that she's not going to be happy when
yes,
Misery
we know
dies.
Misery dies.
So now we've introduced a ticking clock.
I do like in those scenes.
Time bomb. I think you mean time,
a time bomb.
Bomb. Here's a ticking clock that'll go on forever and not cause any suspension.
Oh, yeah.
You know how clocks work, right, Jen?
I do.
We've introduced a metronome just to keep pace.
But we do know Misery or her favorite character is going to die, ending the series.
It's Chekhov's Misery book. Sorry, go ahead.
That's actually really funny. I don't know. Okay, yeah.
Really
I couldn't tell if you were like laughing. Yeah, that's really funny.
Yeah, damn right, man.
So she is like, there are like a bunch of scenes where she is like progressively getting further and further into the book.
Oh, I'm almost, yeah.
And
I'm on page 300.
You could have told me that James Caan was in her care for 2 weeks.
2-7
or
years.
A year and a half.
Yeah.
You could tell me it was like 12 weeks. I didn't know somebody could read 20 pages in 12 weeks.
She does kind of. I don't think she's a fast reader during the scene because she's like 20 pages in.
Yeah.
75 pages in.
Well,
150 pages in. And she don't have cable.
She's watching what, the dating show or something? So we also are introduced to Misery the pig, who comes in and hangs out. And it was a great
actor. That pig actor was doing it, man.
Mm-hmm. She stole the show.
Yo, that pig could give me some bacon.
No.
No, that pig was
Misery.
Really cute.
Yeah, that's why you don't make bacon out of it.
You know, I don't really like bacon that much, to be honest.
Oh,
yeah.
Dude, bacon is so good.
It's fine. I just got baconed out.
So then she walks in. She's mad because she's finished the book. And she knows. She's she's so pissed. You killed her. Yeah.
Is this where she has the chair?
Yeah, she breaks the chair. We think she's going to...
Is it a chair? I thought it was like
a pot
little...
Plant
it's like a pot plant stand.
It's some kind of furniture.
No, it is big, yeah.
Yeah, and we think she's about to smash him with it, and she probably almost is about to smash
him
with it.
Yeah, she goes full female John Candy right here.
Oh, yeah. And she smashes him. She dumps the plant on the floor, too. So she smashes it above his head and then says,
she's going to hit him, though. Like, it does look like she's about to hit him and then she thinks better of it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. His good arm. His other one is still paralyzed from dislocation.
When I mentioned how long he's been there, like, I was going to mention that. If you had just dislocated your shoulder and someone had popped it back in for you, you'd be good in 3 days. Like, you could move it.
You might be good 3 hours.
Sure. It, you'd probably still feel it, but you could move it around
for
sure.
You still fight. I mean, like, don't they do that in films? Like,
but if your legs are basically shattered, I think you guys are underestimating how much pain you would be in just constantly.
But I mean, like, in this scene, he could have raised both of his arms. He could have choked.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Even if your arm's dislocated, if someone's trying to murder you, you're going to instinctively raise your bad arm.
I think the shoulder kind of exists for, like, a visual when you're only seeing him from the waist up.
That is true.
To remind you when you're watching the movie that he is still broken.
I can see that.
He does a great job reminding me that his legs are toast.
Yeah, like, the first time he gets out of bed and they look like puffy, like, gout-ridden pestules of fucking weirdness. Yeah.
So then Annie's mad and then she drives away and leaves him. And this is when he starts to save his pills. And so one of the things I love about this book is when she leaves him in the book, it's like for 3 or 4 days and he's just like in agony because he's so addicted to these pills and he's in so much pain.
That's not what happens in the movie at all.
It's not. And that's
because he is clearly not addicted to the pills in the movie.
Yeah, they never really see that.
We have a 20-minute debate about him being addicted to the pain pills he's taken 4 of in the movie.
Right. And I think I kept just imagining what I read in the book so many times because everything else is very much
like. Are you saying you projected onto the movie?
I did.
Jen, that's so unlike you.
I know. I can't believe it.
He very quickly takes a fork.
Stephen King book too.
He very quickly takes a fork and cuts up part of the mattress so we can shove the pills into the mattress in between the mattress and the box spring.
And that's how birth control works.
What? You have gotten many women pregnant.
I guess it depends on what your definition of works is. It's their responsibility. They just keep drinking water first before they take the pills.
Yes. Okay, this is it.
I don't want to talk about this.
This is when we realize that Todd does not know how to take pills.
Todd, in the middle of all this, goes,
I don't want to talk about
this. Do you guys not drink the water first before taking
It's so weird to me that you put the pills in your mouth and then drink.
I'm going to gag.
I know. And we both looked at him like, you drink the water first.
So you like fill your mouth up with pills, tilt your head back,
no.
And drop
just
the
like,
pill. Like,
gargle them around.
Yeah, gargle. You gargle. You're like,
no, you must.
Every Saturday, right?
How do you take a pill?
I just take like a little bit of water, get it into my mouth. Get it into my mouth, and then I throw the pill in and swallow at the same time.
What the fuck?
What is wrong with you?
So I will.
So what do you do? Like, okay, so some pills are like, this is a ridiculous conversation to be having with adults.
It's
this
just
is
funny
like,
to see somebody in real time realize he's been doing something in a weird way.
It's
his
like people who
life.
Stand up to wipe. Why would you do that? Jen, don't look at me like that. You're scaring me.
Who wipes?
I gotta go. But like, there are pills that have just like the regular coating on the outside that don't taste like shit.
Yeah.
But like, there are like pills.
Capsules.
Like, yeah. But there are pills that aren't capsules.
Tablets.
Yeah. That taste horrible. And I hate that taste.
Antibiotics.
So that's why I started doing that because I would take, I think it was like Tylenol is what it was.
You just have to do it real quick so you don't taste it.
I will meet you halfway and say I can only swallow pills one at a time. And
I can do a handful. It's gross.
Well, you have the water in first.
Yeah. It's like a cheat code to life swallowing pills.
Life hack, pill hack.
Oh, it's so great, guys.
He didn't go to 8 years of evil pill hack.
I need anyone out there who does water first to reach out to me on Twitter so I get some
first.
Background.
Hashtag
Fucking water first all day.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, any weirdos out there wanting to back up Todd. What'd you say?
He called me the swallowing master.
So she leaves, and this is the first time he gets out of bed.
Yes,
he's run out of medicine.
Yes.
That's not why he gets out of bed.
He gets out of bed. Just like, for fun.
Pretend we're watching
for fun.
He's
he gets out of bed for
escape.
Fun.
He is trying to escape.
Well, he gets the bobby pin, right? And this is when she brings the.
I don't think this is when he gets the bobby
pin. He gets out of the bed and then.
He gets out of the bed and just tries to go to the door. That's when he realizes the door is locked.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It is hard for me to remember exactly what is not in the movie.
I'll tell you what's not in the movie. Anything about him doing anything for pills. Everything he does in the movie is to try to escape.
So then she comes back and this is when she makes him burn the book. And she says, God's spoken to me. In my little
oh
shack.
My God, I hate people like this so much.
Yeah, it's for your own good. Jesus has told me this is the way to go.
Let people live their lives, man.
This is the main. This is a Fast Car Untitled.
Yeah. Yes, Untitled. Yeah, Untitled. Yeah. This is when she brings the grill in, puts Fast Cars on the grill, and tries to make him burn it. Saying
she gives him the third degree about the manuscript,
literally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's like, "Well, it doesn't matter if I burn it or not because my editor already has it." Wow, watching Jen get the third degree joke was embarrassing but hilarious. Anyway, so she is like making him burn it. He's trying to spin the lie that his editor already has it. They're already shopping it around. But she knows that's a lie because she knows literally everything about this guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she really does.
On
every
Merv
time.
Griffin 11 years ago, you said you never make copies of your manuscript.
And that's how I know I'm not crazy because I don't know that much stuff about Stephen King.
I don't think that this should be your bar to judge yourself.
Yeah, that's a good point, Mikey.
Yeah, but I know I haven't reached that yet, so I'm doing something right.
Oh my.
Right?
What terrifies me is she said yet.
Did I? Uh-oh.
There's chains on this couch.
They're on to me. Oh, so she makes him burn his book.
Yes.
And then the next thing I wrote is Flamecopter cameo, because this is when we see the cops flying around in Flamecopter.
That's right.
Flamecopter would kick this movie's ass because it would melt all the snow on the side of the mountain.
Oh, yeah. They would have found his car immediately? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
12 weeks later. Flamecopter's got that thing in 12 minutes. The agent calls the sheriff of the local town, says he's missing.
Oh, yeah.
He says, I've got the FBI, the state police involved, because at this point, Todd and I thought this one old man was looking for him, and that's all they got.
Yeah. That is the only law enforcement they have in this town.
But
they do say that.
Good job, because he sees the broken branch.
Oh, dude, yeah. This cop is on it.
Yeah, this cop is great. Like, I really liked him and his wife. They're a great team. They're doing it right, and they're still doing it tight.
I know.
He goes up to the lodge and follows the guy's path, sees a broken lamb, gets out of the car, falls in the snow, almost finds the car.
I know, and realizes, hey, I'm going to die if I try to go down this hill, so he goes back, and they have a good laugh, and then they go home and smash a bunch.
Oh, you know they smashed all night.
Oh, yeah. She's trying to smash him in the cop car while they're on duty. So then she has gotten the typewriter for him in the new paper, and she's decided that part of her evil plan to make him burn his book is that he's now going to write Misery's Return.
Oh, at the end, Misery is she dies in that book and is buried.
And that comes back in a little bit, but right now we just know he's like, no, I don't want to.
And this is where the fight over the paper happens, right?
Yes, yes.
Not really fight. He's just like, I need other paper because this one smudges. Oh, it smudges? Yeah, let me show you. And he types the word smudge.
And then he smudges.
Before the scene and like go around with the penguin and thing?
No, this is, so he tells her he needs more paper, knowing that she'll have to go to town to get it, giving him time, because he sees the bobby pin on the floor, knows that he'll be able to break out and try to get help.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I do think that he wants different paper if he's going to write, but I think this is like a decoy to just get her out of the house.
It could be both. So she leaves to go get the paper from in town.
He types smudge on the paper and it smudges.
Yeah.
And she loses her shit.
She does. Yeah.
She starts sweating.
And slams the paper on his smashed knees, too.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Although in the book, it seems to hurt him a lot. More. He doesn't seem super affected by it. And that
was
when
his shoulder is hurt in this movie.
That's when I started to think, maybe he's not addicted to these pills.
He's not.
He definitely is in the book, but I don't think he might be in the movie, but I don't think it's clear.
He's not in the movie.
Yeah.
It's not clear.
He's 100% not in the movie. Because in this scene, when she leaves, he's like farting around the house because he bobby pins, opens the door, unlocks it.
Because he's coming in the streets.
He goes around the house. He
knocks over the penguin, the glass penguin.
Well, first he sees the phone and tries to rotary dial for 911 and then turns over and realizes it's a fake phone and that she doesn't have a phone. And then he tries to wheel around and that's when he knocks over the penguin and turns him around facing due north, which is a dead
penguin's
giveaway.
Like the south, duh,
exactly. Antarctica.
I want to point out that joke was hilarious, but Jen didn't mean to say it. She misspoke, and it was like one of those comic masterpieces, just like strike a lightning. Like, that was awesome.
Yep.
That's staying in, Jen.
Oh, yeah. I'll allow it. And then he goes into the kitchen, and he goes into her closet and finds all of the pills.
No, he doesn't go. The closet
it's
is
not
different
the kitchen,
than the kitchen.
Yeah, it's a closet. I just imagine a pantry rooms. In the kitchen. But so he sees all the pills at the top. And in the book, he snatches a bunch of them and takes them immediately because he's in so much pain. But here it looks like he's taking them to try to poison her later.
He puts them in his crotch pocket.
He puts them in his dick pocket.
So the joke is that James Caan puts a lot of stuff in his dick and it looks like he's playing with his dick all movie.
That's true. And Mikey reenacted that several times throughout the evening and it was gross and weird every time.
Yeah, it was.
Leave a Yelp review.
And some people are in.
A Yelp review?
Because that's what they
say. What are we, a restaurant?
He's definitely serving up some nuts.
He puts his hands in his pants a lot, okay?
He does.
It's hard not to make a joke.
Well, where else are you going to put stuff? All right, so then she gets home and he's all sweaty. He's going to the kitchen and we see the knife, but he doesn't get the knife because I think he starts
hearing her. The kitchen door is too narrow and the wheelchair can't get
through. He's also tried the door and there's like a bunch of locks on there. So that's why he can't just get out the door.
But they're not locks that you would normally see in a house where you can just unlock them. They're like double key locks.
My mom has those because they're cheaper than regular locks. She relocked the house and like, I was like, why are there locks on the inside? She's like, oh, it was like $20 cheaper.
Guys, don't break into my mom's house.
Then she broke my leg, so it's whatever.
Jeez, so do break
into. Empty nest syndrome.
But if he actually did get out of the house, what's he going to do? Because he's in a wheelchair. So it's going to be hard for him to get down these steps in a wheelchair. So he's just going to be crawling. And then he's in her yard and she's on like a rural road.
Oh, yeah. So he's far away from anything that can help him.
If he can't call anybody, he's fucked. Unless somebody comes to get him or he can call out or he kills her. Those are her options.
He should have killed
her. Then she gets back and he's all sweaty.
Well, there's a suspenseful scene where he's trying to get back into the room.
Yes,
it's like a race.
Suspenseful.
She's like, cuts to her dropping the paper on the ground. Mm-hmm.
Because it's not only is about him getting back in the room, like he has to lock the room up with a bobby pin and that takes a bit because it's not a regular key. So, but when she walks into the room, it's almost like she caught him masturbating because she's like, Sheldon or whatever.
Why are you all?
Yeah. Why are you all
sweaty?
And
warm? What's that puddle on the floor? And he says, I think you know well. So he plays it off like she heard
you
his
never
leg.
Leave me alone. Mom, never now. I was watching YouTube.
Oh, feverishly masturbating.
I was feverishly masturbating. That's what it looks like, though, guys.
Yeah.
Just a heads up.
And then the next thing is Flamecopter finds his man. Because
what?
I wrote that down because that's what Todd said. Because this is when Flamecopter's hovering over and we see that the car, the snow's melted enough to reveal the car.
Someone tweeted at us, like, what our synopsis for Flamecopter, the movie, was. And it was Kurt Russell gets fused into, like, Knight Rider-style Flamecopter. And then I am like the pilot in Flamecopter, but I'm just trying to survive while Kirk Russell is drunk flying around in Flamecopter.
He's like, we must go to Taco Bell.
Oh my God. Flamecopter, we got to go save Timmy from the well.
Nachos Locos <There's> Tacos.
Flames and puke coming out of both sides of the car.
Absolutely.
Gross. All right. So Flamecopter saved the day. And then we have like the press conference because now everybody thinks he's just dead in the woods. But Buster knows what's up because the news person or the press conference is saying that he crawled out of his car and they'll probably find pieces of him in the woods.
Not a very politically correct press conference.
Yeah, it's kind of a downer. Very.
But I will say this, that does make sense if you don't look at the door of the car, which the sheriff does.
If you don't employ any kind of investigative skills.
Yeah, but he has a daughter. I don't want the sheriff to be like, his body got dragged out of the car and he was eaten by animals. We'll probably never find it. Case closed.
He either froze to death or we'll find pieces of him.
He's definitely wolf poop. Sorry, close friends and family of this writer douche.
There's like CNN cameras and stuff.
And I love how like the two rival anchors are like shoulder to shoulder talking to each other. Like, well, you heard it here first on channel. Shut up, Jeff. I'm on an ear.
You think they found an ear?
Tied up in Flamecopter. Flamecopter, what do you see?
Taco Bell.
Todd's on fire.
I'm not going to work. Call him out.
After the Dick Pocket fiasco, Flamecopter has saved the day once
guys,
again.
Guys, Dick Pocket game. 2019 was not pretty.
Don't worry though, Flamecopter saved
Babe
the day.
Ruth did not hit home runs every time at bat.
Rob Rosenstein has appointed a special counsel to investigate Dick Pocket Gate.
No collusion.
Yeah, nobody helped you with that.
No,
joke.
Nobody yes-anded it. Holy shit!
Oh my God, I'm sweating.
Oh. Are you feverishly masturbating?
I plead the fifth.
It was me and Squee.
Squee.
Do you like it?
There's nothing wrong with like a beer.
I honestly do wish that James Caan kept a calendar in this movie so I could have known how long it took for him to get out.
Yeah. And then 40 years
James
later.
James Caan is the last person I would take with me to an escape room.
Back to the movie. So he's starting to save powder from the pill.
And this is where it looks like, the way they shoot it, it looks like he's playing with his mini Caan.
He's got both hands in his pants. He swallows the capsule. So it looks like he's got like 30 seconds in his pants. And he like puts it in his mouth and goes back
down. And it's
down.
So weird. It's very squirrel-like, you know?
It is very squirrel-like,
and
yeah.
Todd and I were snickering and just like, what are you laughing about? This movie's great. And so I reenacted it with the pillow. Said. And she's like, that's disgusting.
Yeah, it was disgusting.
Yeah.
In both scenarios.
All right, so he's saving powder for his pills. Yeah. I'm sorry, I can't help it. The happy oil's kicking in.
I do remember saying at one point, and I don't remember what point in the movie, I do remember because she got really excited. I think it was when she asked if she could read his book, and she was like super excited about him.
Oh, she's like,
and I was like pretending to be her, and I was like, oh, you just made my vagina smile.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then Mikey told us how many pills we could put inside of it.
Yeah, that was weird, Mikey.
All right. He gives her the first draft of his book, which is how the first chapter or so, yeah, which is how he's written Misery back to life.
Right. Well, and he's attempted to do it once before, but she wasn't happy with it.
This is the first attempt. Yes.
I stand corrected.
Because she's like, he gives her the first chapter. She's like, I'm so excited. And you're like, oh, my God.
That's right. That's right.
And then she comes in and she says, I really liked it. It's great. You named the Gravedigger after me.
Yeah, keep that. Everything else
keep that.
Is a
Everything
bag of
else
shit.
Crap. But then she goes on the monologue, and this is probably the other most famous part of this movie, where she's talking about the cock-a-doodie car. He didn't get out of the cock-a-doodie car.
This is the scene that won her the Academy Award. When I was a kid, I watched the old serials, and they'd be cliffhangers, and then the next episode would rewrite the end of the Rocket Man guy thing.
Yeah.
And she's right. And in the book, they talk about that. Like, she's right, and the version that he ends up writing is better. So he makes her. She.
Do you feel like we're in the room with Kathy Bates right now?
Yeah, please help
with Ann Wilkes. Yeah,
I'm closer to Jen. It scares me.
So then she loves the new part, and this is when she starts dancing around. Misery's alive, and he's written her back to life, and it's about like she's talking about how excited she is about the bee sting and how she knew it all along.
Wait,
she loves the new
book. Let's go back, because this is the part where it sounds like I'm talking about Game of Thrones to someone who hasn't read the books. Because
yes,
the first way he brings her back to life is like emergency blood transfusion. That's when she gets really mad because it doesn't make sense in the logic of the fiction.
Because she, in order for those things to happen, things that already happened in the published book before had to have happened differently.
So she comes out with
the
this
logic
long
does not
monologue of really like Dr. So and so and blah 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 and like get buried alive, and it was a lot.
A bee sting, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm with it the whole time because I've read the book so many times. And in the book, you actually read chapters that he's written of the story.
Oh man, you have to read a book within a book?
Uh-huh.
That sounds horrible.
It is good.
But it's like at the end though, you've read two books.
So this is when he invites her to fancy dinner, and she says, I'll put on my Liberace, and she gets all dressed up, and they're all fancy dinnering, and he's going to put the Iocane powder in the...
What you do not smell. Yeah, and that's like the plan, right? So he pours her wine, he pours himself some
Takes
wine.
Takes out his dick pouch.
Right.
Wants to go get some... Well, asks her to get a candle to make it romantic, and that's the flaw in the plan, and then comes back, and he's taking the dick pouch powder out and poisons the
wine. The DPP!
Filled with the powder of like... 12, 14 pain pills.
Yeah.
Mix it in her wine.
Yeah.
Sets it down.
Do you think that would have killed her?
No.
But knocked her out.
I think it would have incapacitated her enough.
But if you're like a female John Candy, you need a lot more than that to kill
her. She is a stout woman.
But it doesn't matter.
We've all taken 14 pain pills with a glass of red wine.
Some of us may have.
I've never had alcohol.
But how do you drive on snow? Never had alcohol.
You can't complete a book.
Now, so then they're doing the toast, and she knocks over the candle, which also knocks over the wine glass. So his plan.
Do you think she knew he had planned this?
No, I don't.
Or is she just clumsy?
He is the worst escape game person ever.
He really is. And he's like, fuck, now I just have to sit.
I thought this was a decent plan. Like,
it was
a
decent plan.
He could have grabbed the bottle and murdered her with it right then.
I don't know, man. I don't know. If you're completely dependent on her and you can't drive, even if you kill her and there's no phone, how do you do that? How do you get out of there?
Plus, how much worse is she going to make it for you if you don't actually kill her?
Right. And okay. I'm not saying James Caan
is not.
Top
of my head, you use a chair as a sled, tie the pig to the chair.
Mush piggy, mush.
Mush the piggy down.
That's the return of misery. Yeah. Pulling into Snowman Tin on a misery sled.
Just don't let the pig drink anything because then they'll flop.
The wolves did kill me, bitches. No, but I'd live in the house all winter because I'm sure she's got food.
And then we get the Liberace typing reading montage.
Oh, yeah. This is like the writing montage forever. Yeah.
We got to go back. The sheriff buys all of the Misery books.
That's right. To research
where he is.
That's right.
And it's in a yellow bag. So we just thought it was the yellow book that had arrived because he walks
like
in.
Like the big phone book?
Why do these come every year, Betsy?
So he gets the books, right? And his wife asks him about it. He's like, well, if I have to find this man, I want to know the way his mind works or some shit like that. Yes. I can't remember his justification.
He's investigating.
Either way, the montage is.
He does not have a lot to do.
I think he just really likes these romance novels.
I mean, he reads all of them.
He's like,
he like really reads them.
His wife comes in. He's like, I'm investigating.
Give me 5 minutes.
I got to clean up. I mean,
I'm on the track of a clue.
Investigating so hard.
Oh my God.
I've almost found the clue.
That was my joke, though. When they were, like, during the montage, yes, or maybe like, after the montage.
Give Todd credit for that one.
He's, like, reading the book, and he, like, asked his wife a question. I was like, he definitely is like, hey, honey, there's a word here I don't recognize. What is the clitoris?
And then I said, Buddy McDougal showed him where that was 20 years ago, because she don't play around.
Apparently not.
Well, I don't believe in any of that.
And this is why you're single.
Mikey, I think I may understand some things about your love life.
That makes one of us, Todd.
Oh.
Let me show you some tricks.
I'm out.
Is
I know
it by
all the
dick
tricks already.
Pouch.
So it's above the dick pouch. It's not the vaginas.
First note, ladies don't like it when you call it a dick pouch.
Yo, baby girl, bring that dick pouch over here.
All right, we gotta stop talking about this.
Yeah, I honestly don't want the word dick pouch to appear more than once in this podcast.
I know. And what are we on, like, 70?
It's
70?
My new Twitter handle.
So then at the end of the musical montage, the reading, writing, typing montage, we hear a thundercloud. And then Annie comes in and she's real depressed and she's got her bathrobe on. She just says, here's your pills. And
sometimes rain gives me the blues.
Yeah.
And this is the one time where she doesn't want to engage with him and she's about to walk out of the room and then he, stupidly, was like, Annie, what's wrong?
Hey, what's up?
Sometimes the rain makes me real sad.
But this is when she introduces the gun as a set
Annie's
piece.
Annie's got her gun. Boom. I don't know the rest of the words.
But you're starting to sing now on the podcast, and I love it.
And I apologize to everyone.
No, I'm on board for it, Mikey.
I am, too. This is the realest I think we see her, too, because she's like, I know I love you. I know you don't love me. Don't say it because I know it's not true. You know,
yeah,
basically,
she's in a lucid moment, for sure.
Yes, she is. She knows. And that's why she's real depressed, because she's like, this is a fucked up situation. I don't know how to get out of it.
Well, she takes out the gun and she goes, I have this gun that I think about using sometimes.
Yeah, I need to go away because I might put bullets in it.
2 bullets.
And then she just walks out in the rain with her bathrobe on and drives away.
Yeah, which was odd because I thought she was going to go upstairs, which is what
the
I
do. The book explains
depressed.
More. She's got what she calls a laughing shack in the woods. Yeah, seriously. And that's where she goes when she gets the blues and she just stays there until she's like,
what's in it?
Out of
just a shitload of sex toys.
Okay. So then he knows he gets out. He's tooling around. He gets the knife out of the kitchen
and hides it in the bed.
Yes. This is when he finds the scrapbook.
Yes.
And he sees.
We had problems with this scene because we said, don't take the biggest knife.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to kill someone, take one of the small knives. You just put it in their neck.
Because she's definitely not going to not know. Notice the right. big knife.
Especially
she's definitely
a knife that is
that.
So big it can't actually fit all the way into the block.
It's like half out of the block.
Yeah. Anyways.
It's a Ginsu knife.
You she comes home and all of her shoes are cut in half. Just to prove he could do it. Right. It's a good knife. It's a good knife. You need all new right shoes.
I left all the left ones. Yeah. So.
Cuts the typewriter up.
Cut the end key off for sure.
And so then he sees the scrapbook or memory lane, if you will. Didn't we have some funny jokes about memory lane?
Nope.
Oh.
Okay, so we see memory lane and we see the book goes into a lot more
detail. Is memory lane
this.
The name of an older stripper?
No.
Would it be?
No.
Memory lane?
So in this memory lane book, we find out that she used to be a nurse and she killed a bunch of babies.
She liked Nixon.
She, in the book, she's killed, I'm just going to give the backstory of the book because I think it's interesting. She's killed her dad. She killed some people that were like making lots of noises in the apartment next to her by setting a fire. She killed her roommate. She didn't kill her husband, but her husband left her because he knew how crazy she was. She killed like a random hitchhiker. And then she started working. She was working first in in a nursing home. And in the book, she was working in a nursing home. She was killing old people. And she was getting away with it for a long time because they're old. And then she moved to the maternity ward and she started killing the babies.
New people, yes.
That's when they started to figure out. And she was arrested and put on trial. A lot of this doesn't happen in the movie, but she was put on trial and she gets off on a technicality or somebody had not signed some kind of lockup.
So it does explain that
it
she
does.
Gets
it
arrested.
Explains how she is. And that's kind of why she lives out here in isolation, because everybody thinks she did it and she's like a pariah. And
she did murder a bunch of people.
She did. Exactly. And they also explain that's why she doesn't have a phone, because people will call and harass her.
Do you think there's a lot of people out there like that have like murdered a bunch of people? They're just like living out in a shack somewhere?
Yeah.
So she comes back from the Laugh Shack.
She does. And
Two drink minimum.
But first, he's got his knife tucked into his sling and he just keeps. So then she comes back and he's got his knife poised, but she doesn't go in. She stops right outside his door. And so he puts the knife away and just falls asleep.
Yeah. And then he's woken up to
her and she syringes him with some painkiller.
I hate this part. If I had a knife, I would have just stayed up until she came back to the room, or I would have knocked something down to lure her into the room to kill her.
So Mikey's got this all figured out.
I mean, that would have worked.
Yeah, right.
That definitely would have worked.
And he's like, got the knife. Good night.
I don't know. I think she's on to him. Because she probably went to the kitchen, saw that the knife was gone, knew that he had the knife, and decided not to go in there because she would get stabbed.
He should have saw the front door opening, started yelling for the pills, lure her into the room.
And then knife
stabbed her in the throat.
Stabbed her in the throat.
And then this is the hobbling scene.
So this scene was rough.
Yeah, this one was. And this is the scene that this movie is known for. He wakes up after she's injected him with whatever the stuff is, and he's like strapped to the bed.
With a bunch of straps.
Yeah, with a bunch of straps. And in the movie, or in the book, she calls it a post-op shot. And then she puts the block in between.
I mean, but during this whole thing, she's explaining, I know you've been out at least twice because penguins don't face north or whatever.
Yeah.
And
you fly south for the summer.
Right. And then she says, were you looking for this? And shows that she has the knife now.
She knows about this whole plan.
And he is, at this point, screwed. Like, you know he's screwed, right?
Mm-hmm. Nothing he can do. And then she starts talking about what hobbling is. And it's from the mines, where if they found that somebody had been stealing, they wouldn't.
Some diamond mine?
They wouldn't kill him, because then they couldn't keep working for him. So they would hobble them by breaking their feet. And it's.
Oh, this is giving me the chills right now.
She puts a board between his ankles.
Yeah, she uses a spreader board, which is normal in this type of thing. Sure. And then she sledgehammers his ankle, I guess, or right above his ankle.
I'll be honest.
It's like around his heel-ish area.
I closed my eyes.
I didn't watch it either.
I didn't think they'd show it. And I had never seen this movie. And I did. I've seen like on Twitter when people post like GIFs or GIFs.
Because this is a very iconic scene.
So like I knew that it was a sledgehammer. I sort of had the idea of what was going to happen, but I didn't think they'd show it.
Yeah.
And I know they show the first one.
They didn't show the second one. I watched.
No, they didn't.
I could not handle it. I was not
ready for
it.
Once you show the first one, that's all you need. Because you know, and then you imagine it being worse. Yeah. So his feet in this scene were actually made out of gelatin. And it's got like a little connector bar. And then it just slams that. And that's why the foot flops around the way it does.
It's effective and horrible.
Yeah. In the book, she cuts his foot off.
What?
With an axe.
I think this is scarier than having your foot amputated.
In the book, I think it's better to cut the foot off. In the visual, I think it's better and scarier here. Plus, it's cheaper.
But
you don't have to have as much special effects this way, too.
If you had to choose between having your foot cut off or both your feet smashed, what would you choose?
I don't know. I don't make that choice.
I think I would do smash.
I mean, I always choose smash over not smash.
He's able to walk again, though.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
And it takes only like 3 seconds to smash your ankles. Cutting your foot off has to be some sort of procedure.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's the post-op shot thing. And she cauterizes it and she accidentally catches part of the room on fire. And she's got to put all that out, too. It's a whole thing.
Also, hit me with a hammer.
Yeah. Hit it with me. Yeah. Hit the hammer.
There's a part where she cuts his thumb off, too.
What?
Yeah. It's a different. And then a part where she gets into another one of those depressive states and she brings him a birthday cake with his severed thumb in the middle of it like a candle. It's messed up.
That is a fucking power move right there.
Everybody loves thumbs up on their birthday.
Yeah.
There's also, there's a part where she picks up a dead rat and just bites into it. Dude, the book goes into a lot more detail about all of this.
It sounds horrible to me. All right.
So this is when the cop figures it out. He has a little library montage where he picks up giant books and figures out, because he sees the quote from her that he had already read in the book. So
yes, she's driving in town and almost hits a person with her car. Mm-hmm. He looks out his sheriff's office and goes, oh, the lady accused of multiple murders, that could be the person who's done this.
Hmm. Yeah, and she starts yelling cockadoodies at other people too.
Yeah, yeah.
So he puts it together. To his credit, he's the only one that has. So then the cop goes to her house, and then she drugs him again, and just fireman carries him down into the basement this time. And the cop comes in, and she's offering him hot cocoa, which is definitely not going to have any kind of poison in it. She does. Yeah. She injects him with whatever that was before. Although it doesn't work as well because he does still.
I don't know how long he gets knocked out the first time. So, I mean, it may have worked the exact same.
Right.
I have no
maybe
idea.
Just long enough for him to like strap.
It may be like a 25 minute thing or a 10 minute thing or whatever. We don't really know. But the cop, I think, does a good job. Acts on a hunch, shows up. But Annie, Kathy Bates' character, has like a backstory for why she has a writing room set up, all that stuff.
It makes sense knowing how crazy she is.
She's like, can I ask you some questions about this author? And she's like, he was born in June.
Yeah, she's like, do it.
Well, but she's the number one fan. Like, yeah, and that's stuff a number one fan would know, number one fans out there.
What's my birthday, number one fan?
Nerds, February 12th, do something.
Okay, yeah, so he's gone upstairs and he's about to leave and he actually is out the door walking down the steps. So then Paul knocks something over in the basement.
The grill.
It's the grill. It's the fast car. And Todd said, damn you fast cars, or no fast cars. So he knocks over the grill out of rage.
But this turns the cop around. And I honestly don't know if he went back in because he thought he heard the guy or if he thought she fell over and didn't help.
Yeah, he goes in because he's a good cop. Because he hears it, he goes in, he goes, are you okay, Annie? Annie, are you okay? Are you okay, Annie? I did it!
I did it! Oh!
Nailed it, man. Well done, Mike.
And then he just yells, I'm awakened down here.
Yeah, and then opens the door and he sees him. And then, bam! Shotgun through the
heart. You're too late, darling. You give James Caan.
No help.
Exactly, at all. Guys.
And then Bunny McDougal is left all alone.
Yeah, I honestly.
The ending of the greatest love story ever told. Yeah. I do too. Yeah, it's sad. In the book, she runs over him with a lawnmower.
What?
It is messed up. She stabs him in the back with a big, like, fence post, and then he's still not dead. So she runs over his head with a lawnmower.
So it happens outside?
Yeah. He throws a coffee pot, or he throws a mug through the window, and that's
he
how
being
he gets
James Caan?
Yeah, James Caan throws the mug through the window, gets her attention that way, and then she stabs him in the back and runs over the lawnmower. It's messed up. And then takes him out to the Laughing Shack and buries the body in the woods.
Well, all right. I have a legitimate question. How long do you think it is before Bunny moves on and finds someone else?
Oh, dude, she's already got that sheriff from the next town waiting.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's probably already over there.
I think it was true love.
I
don't think she's getting over it.
I think it was true love, but chick got to get dick.
Yeah.
I don't believe in that.
She doesn't ever really love new sheriff. She just marries him for companionship.
She doesn't marry him. She's not going to marry again.
No, that's true.
Wow. Mikey has some very strong opinions about a 70-year-old woman.
It takes somebody pretty special to make me walk down that aisle.
Dorothy Mantooth is a saint.
Stay classy. I only seen that movie once.
Stay classy, dick pockets.
Dick pockets. Anyway, she's like true love. She's not getting married again, but she might, you know, find a side piece, whatever.
So then she has the shotgun and she says, we both know what's going to happen. She's basically telling him, I'm about to kill you and then kill myself, because now people are going to come to
look
for us.
I'm going to go get the pistol and put two bullets in it.
Exactly. You're right.
And she goes and gets it and a shot, which I thought was nice. She was going to knock him out before she killed him.
She was. Yeah.
That was super sweet. I get that.
And that's when he grabs the lighter fluid and sticks it in the back of his
butt pocket.
Because he needs more.
A bed sore. Yes. So James Caan smooth talks her.
He says, not until I finish the book.
Yeah, you can kill
it so close. By dawn, I'll be done.
We can give misery back to the world.
Mm-hmm. We can do it for misery. So she reads along. He finishes the book. And she's like, I'm almost done. It's going to be really good. And I need three things when I'm done with the book. I'm going to be done in like an hour. I need three things.
Do you know what three things?
Yeah. I was just fooling. I do know exactly.
Yeah,
three
she
things.
Knows exactly.
And this is the interview
is.
You said that one on, and this is where you said this in that article. Yeah. And so she makes her tray with the from
Lucky
the beginning.
Strike cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
Don Perignon. What's it called?
Perignon. Yeah. And
a hand job. What was the third one?
Glass to drink it in.
Oh, the glass.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And he's like.
And then she's got the gun just like set on her own little tray.
But then she's like, is she going to marry so-and-so or Sir Wadsworth or Ian Malcolmsegg?
Yeah.
So he's like, you're about to find out the answer. And then she gets the stuff. Mm-hmm. And he's like,
oh, Annie. No. But we need two glasses.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's how he wins her heart. Mm-hmm.
And then
and she's like, oh, no, I'll get the second glass.
It's like a slip and slide down there.
Gross. There's just pills
it's
all
like,
up in
it's
there.
Like that Mustang flew off that mountain.
So then he pours the lighter fluid all over the book on the floor and takes like a rolled up.
Yeah,
because
one of the things is a match.
Yes. Yeah.
To light the cigarette. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so he puts kerosene everywhere and then he just power thumb flicks this match on.
That was sort of badass.
It was awesome.
If I did, I'd break the match and then she'd be like, well, fuck you.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, that's what you get for trying to be badass.
So he's got one page.
Couple of pages, and so then she lights it up. She's like, hey, remember how you wanted to know that thing?
Remember if you want to know she was going to be reunited with her dad?
Mm-hmm. All
who she was
going to
marry?
You think she's got noble blood?
You'll never know. And then...
he lights it on fire.
He does.
He fast cars / untitled that book.
Before he says, I learned it from watching you.
Yes.
And so she jumps down there and tries to smash out the flames.
And that's when the brawl of the century happens.
Dude, it is a brutal fight. It is
1,000% Andy Kaufman man versus woman wrestling match. What?
Yeah. Have you watched They Live?
No. Mm-hmm.
It's got the best fist fight of any movie of all time.
I've seen Bridget Jones' Diary, so that can't be true.
Yeah.
That's where they steal it from.
Oh, no.
Oh, really?
It's a shot for shot remake.
Do they both end up in a fountain?
I'm on board.
So then he smashes her with the typewriter in the head. And then, they're just like brawling all over. He puts his thumbs in her eyes.
Yeah, they call it the eyeball gouge.
To gouge out the eyeballs. Yeah.
Well
yes,
named.
If you will.
She kicks him in the nuts. She pulls the gun out, shoots him in the shoulder. She tries to shoot him again.
She kicks him in his injured legs and
hits.
Blood
all over her face.
Yeah.
And then he shoves the burned remains of the book and he says,
In her mouth.
Yeah. In the book, it's like on fire, stuck in her throat. It's gross, and her face turns purple. And so then he trips her, and she smacks her head against the typewriter, and we think she's dead. And so he starts to like elbow
army crawl
out.
And honestly, no foot he is across not. The floor. Yeah, he is not favoring that shot shoulder as much as he was when it was just dislocated.
When he's in crisis, that shoulder is fine.
Yeah,
yeah, the shoulder's shot through, and he's like, I got this.
Oh, that's right. He gets shot in the shoulder.
Yeah.
I forgot.
I'm
about
not
that.
Saying James Caan's a bad actor. I'm just saying he makes bad acting choices.
Well, he got shot in the other shoulder. I think that's his much stronger
shoulder. That's his strong shoulder, Todd.
Well, he was working on a lot during the montage.
He was. Lots of
reps. He's hiding things down there.
Anyway, so he crawls out of the room and then she jumps on him.
Yeah, jumps from behind and then he kind of reaches and finally he...
feel the sexual tension.
Oh, yeah.
Scene.
He finally reaches and he gets this big iron statue of
the pig
and smashes her in the face with it and she falls on top of him face down onto him and then he just like bonks her onto the floor and crawls away.
And this is what happens when you don't remember your safe word.
This whole 3-month episode that he had to go through, he could have been saved all of that time if he had just remembered to say sea cucumber.
Exactly. Yeah. She totally would have respected
this is just
that safe word.
When Craigslist goes wrong.
And so then we see him hobbling on a cane and is wearing his everything's fine now. Tie.
18 months later. 18 we see 18 months later. He's back in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Going to eat lunch with Lauren Bacall, his agent, and they're talking about it.
It was what was it called? I can't remember.
The higher education of something,
Stanley or some shit like that. I can't remember.
Yeah. James Caan is not good at titles.
What? The book is so good.
Fast Cars. Untitled. The education.
You
of
said
J.
James Caan like he wrote this.
Yeah.
Well, you know, whoever.
He didn't.
Stephen King.
Yeah.
Stephen King is great at titles. So what happens?
He's also great at dialogue and great at endings, Mikey.
And great at everything.
Because he's tied up in the basement?
I'm his number one fan. So,
don't look in that crawl space.
Yeah, that's why that thing is really
I've
there.
Read every Stephen King book because I'm trying to find him.
There's a clue in here somewhere.
You know what? In this joke that's going on right now, I'm Bunny, and I'm on board for that. Mike, you're about to get a lot of Todd hand on your thigh.
Thank God. Geez. It's been like 3 weeks since I've been on this podcast.
So then he sees her, and they're talking about how she wants him to write a nonfiction book about what happened, and he says no.
At first she goes, your book's getting great reviews.
Yeah.
And he's like,
it's
why
doing
I didn't
well
write it for them. I wrote it for myself.
I wrote it for me. Yeah. It's better in the book.
What's him? Does he meet his daughter again in the book?
Yeah, I think so. They don't talk about it. In the book, he burned a decoy of Misery's Return, and he ended up actually publishing Misery's Return, and that's the book that's really successful.
Huh, okay.
It's really
okay,
good.
That's where I thought it was going to go.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have liked that, too.
I didn't
dislike the way it ended in this version, but I would have liked that too.
I think the reason they didn't do it in this version is I think it would have just been too confusing to show that, but you can explain that in several paragraphs and it makes sense. But anyways, but what he's talking about is how you never quite get over something like that. And that's when we see Annie Wilkes start to push the dessert tray up to him.
Yeah.
And then we see just a regular lady say, oh, I'm your number one fan.
Yeah. In modern times, this is called post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yes. Yeah. The book goes into a lot more detail about that, too. And it works a lot better in the book. Anyways, and that's the movie.
Clearly.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah, that's the movie.
And Steven loves that one.
And I love, love, love this book. And I like this movie, but the book is way better. So everybody read the book.
It was fun to hear you talk passionately about the book.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not done with that yet either.
So let's do box office, and then we'll jump into your fun facts. I'm sure you got a lot of shit for your fun facts. So the budget for this movie was $20 million.
Oh, mm-hmm. What?
Which is a lot of money, right? It's pretty single location, but yeah, it's some pretty big name actors.
Real Snow.
Yeah, I'm sure it's Real Snow. This is like in the period of Flamecopter's life where he had had a few hit movies. and he had, you know, he was pretty expensive to get in movies.
This is the true lies of his trajectory.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, his flame is
He hadn't jumped from like Jefferson Airplane to Jefferson Starship, so he was not yet Space Flamecopter, but
still
he was on
together,
the transition. Right.
Standing
so
strong forever.
He was probably about half of the budget just to get the cameo.
He really just didn't think anything was ever going to stop him now.
Kathy Bates, this is early on in her career.
Yeah.
So I bet her price tag was pretty low as compared to what it is now, because she's like a powerhouse now. Mm-hmm. James Caan probably was the majority of it, though, to be honest with you, because he was a named actor at that
point.
Was
it, or was like the licensing of the book?
I think that was pretty high, too.
Do you think Stephen King got most of the money?
He did not want to sell these rights to anybody, but because Rob Reiner had done Stand By Me, and that was a good adaptation. Oh, yeah, that's another one I like. He wouldn't sell it unless Rob Reiner was involved.
Shawshank's my favorite.
Okay, that would be the best
one. Good.
All right, so $20 million. Yeah. It ended up making in theaters in its run $61 million.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it made money. It did pretty well for itself.
It was very critically acclaimed.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kathy Bates won Best Actress for
this. Let's just jump into fun facts since we're there.
Okay, so Kathy Bates won Best Actress for this, and in her acceptance speech, she publicly apologized to James Caan for the ankles. Which was funny. I meant to try to pull it up on YouTube.
That's pretty cute.
It is cute. Yeah.
I
love her.
It wasn't like Best Supporting Actress. It was Best Actress.
It was Best Actress. Oh, yeah. And she is really good in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate her, but you're supposed to.
You're supposed to. But yeah, just the range that she plays with all of the different emotions. And that's part of why I think it's so creepy, because everybody knows somebody that's like that to some degree. Not that extreme, but you know people that have those kind of moods.
Oh, yeah,
swings,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, you know, when they put the water in their mouth first and then take the pill.
I know. What
I swear to God, that's
about?
Normal. You guys are weird.
That was an extreme reaction.
he just broke a potted plant against the wall.
He did. So they offered this movie to like everybody in the world, because Paul.
Oh, you mean James Caan role?
James Caan and
you tell me James Caan wasn't the first choice.
Oh,
I think James Caan was all right in this.
Oh, I think he's great in this. He's not
he's
as good
great.
As Kathy Bates, but
he has like a nonchalant like facial expressions about everything. He's like,
I don't think he was great.
Okay,
he
so
wasn't bad, but
they originally offered the part of Annie to Jessica Lange, Barbara Streisand, Angelica Houston, and Bette Midler. Kathy Bates was perfect for this. This is
she had the body type.
I just can't see. Yeah, I just can't see Streisand actually doing this without singing at some point.
Yeah, yeah, she would have milked
Send
that
in the frown.
That montage.
Like I couldn't get into it.
And
yeah,
we're just riding time. It's riding and lifting and reading.
Yeah. That could be scary.
Yeah.
So the people that they originally offered the role of Paul to, are we ready? William Hurt, Kevin Kline, Michael Douglas.
The Pirate King!
Okay.
Oh, God. Yes!
Michael Douglas would have been better. He would have been
better. No, dude, the Pirate King all day.
Harrison Ford, Dustin Hoffman, Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, Richard Dreyfuss, Gene Hackman, Robert Redford, and Warren Beatty.
I would have loved
that. All
like
turned them down.
Every A-list actor in the fucking 80s.
In his age range, yeah.
When they draw straws, they're like...
But nobody wanted to do this movie.
Why?
Because you're laying it. He had to lay in bed for 15 weeks.
Yeah, I was about to say, you're doing a lot of bed acting.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Mikey's like, oh, yeah. How difficult that would be.
That's where I excel.
Bed acting.
You've seen a lot of women do a lot of bed acting, haven't you, Mikey?
It's real to me.
So this was adapted, and it was just on Broadway in 2016, I think. And Laurie Metcalf and Bruce Willis were the two stars of it.
Ooh.
And Laurie Metcalf got nominated for Tony. She didn't win, though. And the screenplay was actually written by William Goldman, who also wrote Princess Bride.
And founded the mutual fund company Goldman Sachs.
Did he really?
No.
Oh, okay.
They went.
My last fun fact that is not related to Stephen King is that this was released on my birthday.
Now we know.
That was my birthday fun fact. Okay, so this movie is basically about addiction, and this was written when... Seriously, when Stephen King was addicted to cocaine. And so he's writing, he didn't talk about this till about 20 years later, but he was talking about how Annie is basically a representation of what cocaine addiction did to him. Like, kept taking parts of him, kept him isolated, kept beating him up.
So Annie was cocaine.
Annie's a metaphor Annie's for cocaine. And this was before he got clean from that, too.
See, I thought this would just be like his fear as a writer.
It is. Well, there's more about that, too. So he wrote It, which everybody loved and was huge. And then he wrote The Eyes of the Dragon, which is a fantasy book, kind of for like, it's almost like YA fantasy. And I kind of liked it. But his fans were really angry because they wanted him to go back to horror. So you can see, like, she's mad because she just wants him to write more misery. So it's almost like him taking his frustration out on his fans through this
book.
Yeah,
I could definitely see that.
And part of the reason I think this is a successful adaptation of a Stephen King book is because there's nothing supernatural in it at all. And that's because this was originally supposed to be a Bachman book. Do you guys know who Richard Bachman? That's his pseudonym. And it's kind of a different writing style. There's usually not much supernatural stuff in those books. And they're really like more nihilistic and don't tend to have happy endings. So as he was writing Misery, that's when somebody outed him as Richard Bachman.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So he had to release this as Stephen King, but he had originally intended to make it a Bachman book. So the original ending of this went before he wrote the book. The original ending was Annie getting the book finished, killing him, feeding him to the pig, and then using his skin to bind the book. And he was going to title it Annie Wilkes First Edition. That's not how the book ends, but that was the original ending.
That sounds horrible.
I know. Yeah, I'm glad he did the way he did it.
I did say she was going to feed him to the pig.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. That's all my fun facts.
Nice.
Just
all right.
Fun facts. I need a theme.
So scary scale. Let's scary scale this, John.
Scary scale. Okay. So listeners, our scary scale is how we rank how scary we were when we watched these movies today. It's not a ranking of the quality of the movie. It's a ranking of how scared we were when we watched it today. Our one example is Ghostbusters, and we're not changing it. Our 10 example is Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
We're not all changing that either.
Todd, no, we're not. Todd, what you got?
I'd give us a 3.
3, all right.
It's not scary. There's one scene that's very, why?
Gory.
And that's it.
I also give it a 3.
3? Okay. Mikey, for the same reason?
It wasn't even that much of a thriller.
No, it's creepy. And there's a lot of atmosphere that makes it creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And that one scene where she breaks his feet is really hard to keep your eyes open during. And yeah. I wish I hadn't, because I'm going to see that tonight when I wake up screaming like I do every night because you guys terrify me with these movies. But like, I could watch this again. I wouldn't enjoy watching it again, but I could sit through it and be fine.
I barely classify it as a horror movie. I do think it's a decent film. But I don't think it's a horror.
Yeah, like for me, this is on the level of Frailty.
Okay.
Mm-hmm, I can see that.
It's not necessarily a bad movie. I get why people think it's a great movie. I'm not trying to knock it. I'm not saying it's not a good movie. I probably will never watch this again, but I understand why people do like it.
And I think technically it would be considered a thriller too under the horror, which is still technically part of the horror universe. Oh, I love you, Stephen King. I would never hurt you. So they're sharing weird looks.
Well, that's because you just said the most Ann Wilkes thing of the whole night.
Annie Wilkes.
I'd never hurt you, Stephen.
No, I wouldn't. I want you to keep writing books.
That's literally the plot.
Yeah, I'm going to give this a 4. Yeah, it is very uncomfortable. I can't watch the hobbling scene because it's...
Yeah, honestly, now that I know you need to look away, I will look away. I didn't know they were going to show it, and that's why I didn't close my eyes.
Yeah.
Had I known, I would have closed my eyes.
And there was a lot of debate about whether to keep it in or whether to make it a foot cutting off an amputation scene. And I think that the choice they made is the best because that's what this movie is really known for. But I think Kathy Bates is just so good in this movie. You really believe that she's nuts.
Yeah.
And it just makes me uncomfortable. May have to cut this out. But as someone who's the ending scene makes me really uncomfortable. It makes me really sad for her, which is fucked up. But like just some of the relationships I've been in, I know that feeling of like living with somebody who's uncontrollable and that turn they have when you stand up to them and they like turn on you and then the shit gets real. It just makes me really uncomfortable.
And you sympathize with her?
Yeah.
No, I sympathize with him.
Oh, you said with her.
You said you feel bad for her.
I do feel bad for her because when you see that person that is in control of you turn like that, you want to keep that person happy because that person is in control and that person will hurt you worse if you're not able to actually kill her.
And you feel bad for her?
I do because some relationships I've been in, like you want to keep that person happy and it makes me so uncomfortable. So
do you think James Caan was in control the whole time?
No, she is.
Are you confused, Mikey?
I'm confused. Are you saying that you feel bad for her because James Caan makes her mad?
Yes, because that's when it becomes terrifying for me because of some codependency issues that I have.
Aren't you proud of James Caan standing
yes,
up to
I
her
am.
And leaving?
And so what I said last time was 10 years ago, I didn't like this movie at all because that scene was too hard for me to watch. Now, because of therapy and a bunch of shit, I can handle it a lot better. But it still just makes me really uncomfortable. Also, it's a man beating a woman to death, and that makes me uncomfortable too.
Well, he doesn't want to.
She's
oh, no. She. I mean, like, it's self-defense. He's just
absolutely
she's pretty jacked. Like, she would take James Caan in a regular fight.
It just makes me really uncomfortable to watch it more than to read it. I enjoy reading this story a lot more
than
I enjoy watching the
movie.
You
read this book, I would assume.
It's different seeing it for me. I don't know why
it's a different medium.
It is. And I'm not a visual person, so I'm not imagining it in my head. So when I see it, it becomes a lot more real to me. Yeah. So four. Jen's therapy corner wraps up with a four on the scary scale.
My scary scale has gone up just listening to Jen talk about her scary scale.
So I'm going to put this podcast at a nine for me. This shit got real, real.
If anyone doesn't see me next week.
Before we do the plugs, I made some cocoa for you guys.
Oh,
if
God.
You would like to share it.
Death pocket. Yeah. So week. Jen, what do they need to watch next week?
Mikey, would you like to talk about what we're watching next week?
This is one of my favorites. Yep. It's called The Collector.
I know.
You're like it.
I guarantee you I'm not.
He probably
like
won't.
It as a movie, but hate it as a horror thing.
I don't think
I might
that's
like
true.
It. I don't
Jim
think
will
he
definitely
will.
Like it.
Yeah.
Right.
It's The Collector. It's a little like Saw, but it's a cat and mouse game. It's my one of my favorite franchises because there's only two movies and it wraps up cleanly at the second one and it's over. It's the end.
Well, guys, watch The Collector before next week.
And
lots
after
of hobbling.
The Collector, something very special is going to happen.
Guys, if you're in the Kansas City area, buy tickets to our
live show.
Kansas City live show. It's our very first live show at Panic Fest. Go check it out. It's going to be amazing. Just Google Panic Fest and you'll see it there. We're
follow
on there.
Follow them on Twitter, Panic Fest.
Yep. Also, make sure you guys follow us. That's Jen Ferrazzi on Instagram and Twitter. MRandolph24 on Instagram and Twitter. I'm at Todd J. Awesome on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Of course, we are at Horror Virgin on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and Patreon. If you guys want to help keep the show free but supported, go there and do it. It's a lot of great stuff you can get through the Patreon. We really, really appreciate it. We really do.
Mm-hmm. Also, visit our website, horrorvirgin.com. We've got links to our merch store, and we've got the blog. I mentioned several different blog entries that I've written
you did.
About this. Yeah.
Jen's got lots of blogs. It's all great.
I do. Oh, thank you, Mikey.
You're welcome.
And you've read them all, so you know.
They're very
emotional. Absolutely right. I've read all of them since I've been here.
We are also a member of the Modern Horrors Podcast Network.
Yes, we are. They have a lot of great shows, of which we are one, but go check them all out. They're
the
all
best
really
one.
Great.
I mean, part
also,
of
also, be looking out for information about the movie that they're making right now called God Country. They're starting to release new information about that, and I think you can follow God Country on Twitter, too.
You can. Guys, so the time has come for us to draw five names out of the mug. Any mug.
It's my favorite time.
Which are all of the remaining mugs we have left.
Yes.
Because you guys... Deliver.
Are awesome. Thank you, HV family. You are the best.
We were at 93 reviews.
Uh-huh. Adam
and
Mikey.
You guys
get a lot of reviews.
Yep. Hashtag Mikey Bump.
Yeah, that Mikey Bump.
Yeah. I'm trying to work off that Mikey Bump since the new year started.
Christmas, man. I get it.
Yeah. My mom's a good cook.
So we said if we could we said if we could get to 100 reviews by the next time we record, that we would draw for all the
and
remaining
we were at 93
mugs.
At the time.
We were at 93.
Where are we now?
We are, well, first of all, let's say we got to that goal by the end of the day.
Yeah.
You guys were fantastic. So now we are at 107.
Thank you guys so
Who's
much. You guys are amazing.
Our next goal is 1,000.
Quick maths.
That is... Yeah. Hey, sky's the limit, guys. All right, Mikey. I'm going to let Mikey draw one.
Oh, I'm going to draw
also.
One?
Mikey,
you do the first one?
Draw the first one, yeah.
All right.
Now, guys, we actually put them out on the table because there are too many for the mug. We couldn't get to the ones in the bottom anymore, so we had to put it on the table.
That's
all right, I've drawn
a
name. It's hard to say.
T. Schnabel 28.
You said I could draw it.
You did draw it, and then
you did draw it. You didn't read it because you can't read, Mikey.
And then you
what is a T. Schnabel?
T. Schnabel. Yeah, T. Schnabel.
T. Schnabel, you know who you are.
Don't
you
name
at us on Twitter, guys.
T. Schnabel 28. So,
second mug. Red Scare 83.
Red Scare 83.
Yep.
Oh, I could say that.
Well, he should have drawn a mug.
Third mug. Oh, man.
Cicero 2122.
Cicero 2122.
Like the philosopher?
Yeah.
Nice.
It's in pink.
I don't think that matters. Fourth mug.
Horror 1313.
I feel like this is rigged for her to get the easy one.
I mean, too. We're all watching you draw the mugs, right?
Okay, I'm going to do this one.
This is the last one. Fifth mug.
Can he say it?
Oh, no. Boss Got Swag.
I love that name. Boss Got Swag.
With one S. Okay.
All right.
So maybe it's Bo's Got Swag.
Bo's Got Swag.
Nice.
Bus Got
nice.
Swag.
I can't even do this.
All right, guys. Check out our socials at Horror Virgin on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Let us know that you want a mug, and we will get your address from you and send you your mug. But guys, that doesn't mean we're not going to do any more of these. We definitely will.
Yes.
It'll just be, you know, over time as we hit other milestones. And
we'll do a drawing. I'll come mow your grass. Mm-hmm.
Do anything you need around the house.
Yeah.
We'll do dishes. Mm-hmm.
And look, I'm putting all the names
back in the mug.
Back in the mug.
Even, except for the ones that won, right?
Yes, the ones that won, we're putting on our bulletin board of mugs.
Right. All right, guys. So thank you so much for the support over the past 7 months or however long we've been doing this. You guys are amazing. You're new. We've been working our asses off to make this show fun and free, and it's going to stay that way. But we really appreciate you guys helping support the show either through Patreon or leaving ratings and reviews, telling your friends, all that stuff. Thank you guys so much. We really appreciate it. We're going to keep this thing going.
Have a great week.
Yeah,
I appreciate your support having me on and joining the crew and stuff.
Yeah.
Hey, and that's going to be it for us, guys. Did we figure out how to do it? I'm Jen.
I'm Mikey.
I'm your virgin, Todd, and we will see you next week, guys. Watch The Collector.
Woohoo!
Bye-bye. Have a good week.
Bye!